You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. It's the end of an era in Sacramento TV news. Mark Finan has been the chief meteorologist at KCRA3 for more than three decades. Since 1991, he's informed viewers of the biggest weather events in history, from snowfall to flooding, heat waves, and devastating wildfires. After 33 years, he entered a well-deserved chapter on Friday, retirement. There were audible gasps in the CAP Radio newsroom when that announcement was first made, showing how much he's been part of lives in Northern California. Mark sat down with CAP Radio's Steve Milne last week to look back at his career and how he plans to spend his time after KCRA3.
Mark, welcome to Insight.
Well, thank you for having me. This is an honor to be here.
Well, how does it feel to be retiring?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not really quite sure what's on the other side. There's a lot to, you know, to process as I'm going through the last days of KCRA. And I'm looking forward to what's in store for next week and next month and beyond, and planning things that I'll now have time for that I haven't had time for before. So it's a pretty exciting time, but it's also a kind of a nervous time, a bit of anxiety entering the unknown after 33 years at KCRA and working at other television stations before that. You know, a work schedule certainly keeps you busy and occupied, and suddenly turning that off is a bit of the unknown, but I'm excited about it.
Well, let's go back to the beginning of your career. What sparked your interest in meteorology?
Well, I think I wanted to be a meteorologist since I was about five. A line that popped into my head a couple of weeks ago is, I've wanted to be a meteorologist since before I could spell meteorologist. It was just one of those things. When I was a kid, I always was more interested in weather than everybody else around me. And it's just one of those things. I was always curious about the weather. What caused it? What caused our summer thunderstorms? I grew up in New Hampshire, and we had summer thunderstorms. We had big snowstorms in the winter. I was always curious about what made them happen. And, just looking out the window and seeing it snow and seeing snow drifts pile up, I always get very excited about it. Well, my parents weren't very excited about it. I was. And that has never left me. So when it came time to decide where to go to school and what to study, meteorology seemed like a natural thing.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, you grew up on the East Coast in New Hampshire. You started your career in Portland, Maine, then Rochester, New York. How'd you end up in Sacramento? Why did you decide to leave for the West Coast?
Well, they offered me a job. And while Rochester was, I enjoyed the people I worked with and the area that I was in, KCRA is an amazing television station. It is known throughout the industry as being one of the premier local television stations in the country. And when they offered me a job, I said, yeah, that would be nice to work for a company like that. And it has been so rewarding to work with the men and women there over the course of the years. The faces have changed, the mission has stayed the same, and it is it's rewarding every day to work with professionals like that. And so my decision 33 years ago to move to California and to work at KCRA is one that I'll forever be thankful for. It was a great move.
And what were the biggest challenges adjusting to the job in Sacramento?
Well, it's one thing to forecast the weather, but once you forecast for a specific location, every location has its own little idiosyncrasies. So it took me a while to figure out. I had never really spent much time in Northern California. So figuring out Delta breezes, figuring out how the west slope of the Sierra works, how the Sierra works, the Tahoe Basin, just how the overall weather patterns that we're used to looking at, how to translate that down into our local weather. And then as time goes on, you further develop that and how the weather is different from Roseville to Auburn and just the small little things. And, you know, while I've been doing this for 33 years here, I still learn things every day, and there are still things that surprise me. We had a case this spring where we had some lower snow, and the snow came down about 1,000 feet lower than I thought it would, and I still don't know why it happened. And that's kind of one of the things I like about weather, is no matter how much we study it, things can still surprise us with it.
Well, what was it about living here that led you to stay?
It's easy to live in Northern California. And, you know, and also working at KCRA, as I mentioned, has been phenomenal. But then away from work, as everybody knows, in Sacramento, we are close to everything. I love spending time in Yosemite. I love spending time in the High Sierra, as well as in places like Napa. So there's just so much to do here. And the other thing that I like when it comes to forecasting winter storms, you know, on the East Coast, if we're forecasting a snowstorm, that means I've got to go home and I've got to shovel the snow. I've got to drive to work in it. I can forecast 5 feet of snow in the Sierra and drive home without any worries at all.
Well, I think that viewers probably are aware that you're a big Patriots fan. Do you still consider yourself a New Englander or a Californian?
It's funny. It's a really good question. I still kind of consider myself a New Englander, but it's funny how, you know, I've been out here now 33 years. I left New England, when I was 18, I went to school in Utah. And while I was back in Portland for a couple of years, you know, after that, I've been out of New England. So I spent more time here than I ever spent in New England. But there's something interesting. I still have family back there. And I go back there and you drive the roads and you see the rock walls and the architecture, some of the older homes and the churches and that sort of thing. It just, there's something inside that just goes, oh, this really feels like home. And even though I don't get there as often as I'd like to, although that should be changing here shortly, like I said, it just kind of feels like home when I get back there. And as a long-suffering Red Sox fan, it's fun to kind of, you know, be removed from them when they have bad seasons like they're having right now. Also, looking forward to maybe having them play in West Sacramento next year. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, Mark, take us behind the scenes a little. What's it been like working in TV news and specifically KCRA?
Well, KCRA, as I mentioned, is just loaded top to bottom with nothing but professionals, great journalists and great engineers that are committed to doing great work. And the thing that I found when I got to KCRA is while I had worked in Portland or I worked in Rochester, I felt like for me to rise up to the level of the people that were working at KCRA, I had to step up my game a little bit more. So, and it's a great environment to work in because you don't want to let down any of your coworkers because you can see that they're all dedicated, intelligent, hardworking people, and you just don't want to let them down. So it's a great atmosphere to work in. And the folks at KCRA are truly committed to working, you know, for the community and with the information that the community needs. And it's just a great place to work. So with my element of it, while I forecast the weather every day, there's also ways that we look to contribute. Well, let's say there's a grass fire going on. We can contribute in terms of how the wind is going to move that, how strong are the winds, how that fire may move, grass fires, larger fires, that sort of thing. We always look for ways to contribute to the overall news product. So it's a very collaborative process in our newsroom, and it's just been nothing but a joy to be part of it.
And how do you think local TV news has evolved over the past three decades?
Well, you know, when I started in 91, we didn't have social media. There's no Twitter, there's no Facebook, no YouTube, nothing like that. So, and also there was even less on cable TV than there is now too from 91. So while the overall audience has diminished in terms of who may watch the 5 p.m. news, let's say, there may be fewer people watching than there were back in the early 90s, the overall audience has actually grown because we have so many more sources that we can feed. We can get people information on Facebook, on the KCRA page, on YouTube, on Twitter /X, whatever you want to call it. So there's so many more ways that we can get information out to people. So the news industry is certainly evolving from what it used to be when we just do the 5 o'clock news. But I guess what we're always looking for, especially in terms of weather, is getting out information to people in wherever they might be and finding where they're looking for it and being there with the information they need.
And Mark, you're a relatively young guy. When did you make the decision to retire? And was it an easy decision or did you kind of struggle with it?
It's a little bit of both. You say I'm relatively young.
To me, you're...
I appreciate that, but I'm actually paying Medicare, so I'm not that young. So I do put a lot of time into work. My normal workday in the office is 1:30 to 11:30, and I do some work in the morning. So it's one of those things that I put a lot of time and energy to, and it's the only way I know how to do the job. And while I am still relatively young, there are a lot of things I want to do. And so the time just seemed right to take the time and energy that I have to dedicate it to the things that I'd like to do a little bit more. But I do think I'm going to struggle with it a little bit. And that's why I still do weather from home in the morning. I do some an update in the morning on YouTube, and that'll be my outlet. And some people really have found that to be helpful, and I find it helpful. It's a different format. And again, another place that people are looking for information, and you can give some information. So I'll still have that outlet. And somebody asked me about it the other day, about, you know, leaving, stopping doing weather. And I was like, you know, I'm retiring from TV. I'm not retiring from weather. You know, I've as I said, I wanted to be a meteorologist since I was like five. And that doesn't change, even though it's 60 years later. I'm still going to want to be forecasting the weather and still have that curiosity about weather that I had when I was 5 years old.
You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with KCRA Chief Meteorologist Mark Finan, who is retiring after 33 years at KCRA. Mark, let's talk about some of the historic weather events that you've covered and reported on. In 1997, catastrophic flooding devastated communities throughout Northern California. Take us back to that time and your thought process about the important role you had in guiding and informing people through that.
Yeah, that was an incredible morning on New Year's morning, 97, and then what transpired over the next few days. And there's still a lot of images that I have in my head from what happened over the course of those few days. The day before, it's New Year's Eve, we knew that it was going to be bad. However, we didn't have the same kind of technology we have right now, but we knew enough that this was going to be bad. So I went into the office on New Year's morning, even though we didn't have any newscast scheduled, and a couple of other people came in as well. And we started getting reports that the Napa River was rising and flooding. We were starting to get reports that Cache Creek was rising. And it just seemed like it was a cascading sort of events. We were just getting reports of this happening and that happening, a mudslide on Highway 50, closing Highway 50. And so things just started to snowball. And while early in the morning, we were doing what we call cut-ins, we have whatever programming, and I just cut in and I do something like 5 or 10 minutes, giving people an idea of what was going on. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning that the executive producer, the assistant news director, came to me and said, "We're just going to stretch this one out a little bit. And instead of doing 5 or 10 minutes, just take your time and do whatever." And so I'm talking about flooding, and I think I had talked on the phone to somebody from DWR and that sort of thing. And so I'm just kind of going through the process of describing to people what's happening. And then in my ear, somebody says, "Toss to the anchors." And I didn't even know there were anchors in-house because of the way our weather office was scheduled. And that's what kicked off 80 hours of continuous coverage. And we just stayed on. But so from the images that morning, and then, as I said, things just were bad everywhere. We've had flooding events in the last 30 years, but nothing like what in 97. And like the flooding that we had last year, we had the Cosumnes River flooded Highway 99. It was bad, but it was isolated. Well, this, well, sure, we had the Cosumnes River. We had the Tuolumne River flooding Modesto. We had flooding in the Sacramento area. We saw flooding in Napa. We saw flooding on the Truckee River. And then the worst was on the night, I believe it was January 2nd, going into the morning of the 3rd, there was a levee break on the Feather River, and it flooded the area around Arboga. And that happened in the middle of the night. They had to evacuate people. And our helicopter at sunrise was flying up where the break had taken place. And I'll never forget this image. It's daybreak. All you're seeing is water and rooftops and the tops of some trees. And here we are just outside of Marysville, and there's a Coast Guard helicopter hovering over some trees and hoisting somebody out of a tree that they'd been clinging to all night, that they got stuck in the floodwaters. And it's just something you don't see. And while we're trying to be professional journalists and meteorologists, it can't help but rock you to see what these people have been going through throughout the night. So there's so many images of that event that stick with me now, 27 years later, and will always be with me. That was a devastating event for Northern California, obviously.
Yeah. Another major event happened in 2017. We had the Oroville Dam spillway crisis, which caused the evacuation of nearly 200,000 people downstream. I remember the evacuations happened on a Sunday. What do you recall about that?
That had been an event that had kind of built up throughout the week. I don't remember which day it was, whether it was Tuesday or Wednesday, when we got video from a viewer that they were showing video. They were out there just shooting the water coming down the spillway, because it's always a spectacular sight when water comes down the Oroville spillway and it has this big cascade of water down at the bottom. So somebody was out there shooting video of it. But then they started noticing pieces of concrete were flying in the air as well. So they had to shut down the spillway, and we're starting to go through the process. Well, if you shut down the spillway, we're still getting rain. It was a very wet February. It was a very wet year. And so we started doing the math, like, wait a second. You're going to have to send some water down that spillway because this thing's going to fill up. And so that was a process that was taking place over the course of a few days. And finally, on Saturday morning, the water started spilling over the emergency spillway. Now, keep in mind that at that time, we had to look to figure out what was the emergency spillway. I mean, you have the dam, you have the spillway, and then there was this area, as you're looking at the lake off to the left, that they called the emergency spillway. Well, it was just kind of covered in weeds. Didn't look like anything that was all that set up for water to be coming down it, but and it had never been used, obviously. So that happened Saturday morning, and then by Sunday afternoon, I was home, and it had been a long week, and a friend of mine texted me and said, "Are you on your way to the office?" I had kind of checked out. I looked at things in the morning. I was just trying to relax, and I'm thinking, what's going on? And instead of texting the person back, I just I called them while I was going to put on a suit and I come down Highway 50 to get to the office. So, yeah, 180,000 people being evacuated. And once again, our helicopters over the scene. And you just saw the highways near Oroville just bumper to bumper, people trying to get out of the way. What I remember about that afternoon was the amount of, well, misconception about what was going on. There were rumors that the dam itself was going to fail. And obviously, that wasn't true. So what we had to do that afternoon and evening was to let people know what the danger was, but mostly what the danger wasn't. And that every hour that went by, they were letting water down the spillway by then. They were just saying, okay, we'll just, you know, deal with this later. We'll have to rebuild the whole thing anyway. So they just said, okay, we'll just put as much water down the spillway as we can, because that way it would relieve pressure on the emergency spillway. Because by then they were worried that the emergency spillway was going to give way. That was what prompted the evacuations. So what we figured out was that every hour that went by, the threat of having the emergency spillway fail would decrease. And so that's what we were trying to do, is to kind of thread the needle of reassuring people about how the threat would decrease as we go hour by hour, but also let them know that this is still a serious situation. And in a situation like that, as well as a lot of other cases, what you do is you just, what I think is, if I have just been told to leave and I'm in my car on the way out somewhere, what's the information I want to know? So I put myself in their position and try to figure out, talk to them directly and say, this is exactly what's going on. Here's what you need to know. And, you know, in that case, thinking that by 4 or 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, this threat will be over. You know, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about another really horrific event. In 2018, we had the car fire in Redding and the campfire in Paradise and surrounding communities, two of some of the deadliest and most destructive wildfires in state history. Again, what stands out to you about those events?
Yeah, the car fire was amazing. The speed at which it went into the areas around Redding and the aftermath. I mean, there was a tornado in that, a full-fledged fire tornado. And the dynamics that made that happen were incredible. And I won't get into all the details of that. So the combination of weather and fire with that one were amazing. And then the Paradise fire, that was just... Again, you know, you're in a newsroom and you know what's going on and you're trying to report on what's going on. But by the same token, you're a human and you know just how bad it is. And you can't help but be rocked by something like that as it's transpiring right before your eyes.
Yeah. One of the reasons you're so respected in the industry and endeared by viewers is obviously your expertise and accuracy, but also your calm demeanor during dangerous weather events. You know, there's a sense of urgency, but you're not, you know, to put it bluntly, you're not freaking out. So, I mean, how do you do that? And what's your advice to maybe young meteorologists, young journalists today to keep it together?
Well, I appreciate that. I think, well, and especially today with social media, there is quite often more hype that goes with weather events and other things like that. So you cut through that hype without addressing it. But all I do is focus on what is happening and what is going to happen. And sometimes what is going to happen is going to be bad. And you don't have to add any adjectives to it. If something is going to flood, it's going to flood. And you tell people, yes, this is going to flood. And you tell them as directly as you can. Because there will be many times when you'll say, well, something isn't going to flood. It's like, okay, you're hearing this, but it's actually not going to impact you. It may impact somebody else downstream or something like that. I don't know. I think every case is a little bit different. I do think there was one or two tornadoes that happened that I might have been a little bit more excited about. That so I may not have been as calm as people give me credit for. But yeah, for the most part, I just try to cut through the clutter of what people may be hearing outside and just kind of focus on what is happening and what will be happening and try to do that in as straightforward a manner as I can. And I, again, try to cut out all the adjectives. I think that's a good rule for journalism in general, to cut out the adjectives.
And that trust you've developed with viewers over the years, can that be a bit of a burden? Because, you know, you don't want to get the forecast wrong, but you're dealing with Mother Nature where things could change.
I don't know if it's a burden. The way I look at it is every situation is different. Every day is a chance to miss or make a forecast. And it's something that not just me, but the rest of our weather staff, we take seriously. And whether it's something as simple as what impact the Delta breeze is going to have. And forecasting the high in Marysville, whether or not Marysville is going to hit 100 and what it's going to do for Sacramento, that may seem like it's just numbers to some people, but we're grinding over those numbers. I mean, it is funny. We will get so deep into the weeds. We're like, okay, yeah, I have 92 for tomorrow, but it might be 91. We really do kind of get into that kind of detail. But it's that kind of detail that then I think pays off when we are looking at something bigger, like what's the snow level going to be? How much snow are we going to see at 3 or 4,000 feet during a winter storm? Things that are much more impactful because we do the routine. We go through the process of forecasting every day. We don't take any forecast for granted, so that discipline just pays off when bigger storms are coming. You don't have to suddenly turn on a part of your brain to do the forecast. If you just grind on the forecast every day to try to get it right, the bigger situations are easier to forecast.
Well, Mark, when it was announced that you were retiring, there were audible gasps in the Cap Radio newsroom, and just illustrating how much of part of people's lives you've been for more than 30 years. And so we have some questions from Cap Radio staff. If you'll indulge us, we'll just a few questions here. And this one comes from our afternoon anchor and super fan, Devin Yamanaka. I'll just read here.
Okay.
There have been times over the years when you broke from newscaster tradition and reported the weather in shirt sleeves, not your usual business suit. It was usually during a breaking news weather event such as funnel clouds. Some folks started using that as a sign of the severity of the weather. If Mark Finan is broadcasting in shirt sleeves, it must be bad. Was that a conscious choice?
It was sometimes, let's say it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we have a tornado warning, we have something. Sometimes it is something as simple as the logistics of what's going on. Maybe I don't have the time or I'm in a rush. So I just go out to the studio and sometimes I think maybe I'm not even going to be on TV, and things just evolve that way. Sometimes I put on my suit coat and sometimes I don't, and also I think it's funny that somebody picked up on that. It really isn't a conscious thing. It's just something that sometimes happens. And I actually feel more comfortable wearing my suit coat. But sometimes, just having your sleeves rolled up and just getting down to work is, I guess that does send a signal sometimes, but it's not intentional.
Again, reading from the Cap Radio staff questions, you're as much a part of Sacramento as the Kings are. Are you planning on staying here after you retire?
Yes, I am. But I will be traveling a lot more. And, I do plan to get back to New England more often. But as I said, Northern California is a pretty nice place to live. And there are a lot of places that I still haven't been to around here and places I want to explore. So I will be doing more of that. I'll be outdoors a lot more often. Spending 50 hours a week in the office is somewhat limiting, and I do want to spend a lot more of that time, especially in the High Sierra.
Another question from our senior news producer, Drew Sanzer. What are your top three golf courses to play on in the Sacramento region?
Well, I've been a member of Cameron Park Country Club for about 30 years, so I have to give a shout out to them. I think one of the most, I haven't played it very often, but to me, one of the most demanding golf courses is Granite Bay. I think it's just a great championship golf course that beats me up every time I play it. And a third, let's see, I'd say Ansel Hoffman. It's a good public golf course. It's a good layout, and it also can beat you up too. So it's a good challenge, and it's a great public golf course.
People have been watching you for years. Generations have grown up with you. What has that meant to you?
I think I'm only starting to come to grips with that now. You go to work every day and you don't think too much. I haven't thought too much about what it may mean to people. But when, after I announced my retirement back in April, it started to getting a lot of cards and notes and messages online. It's a little overwhelming right now. And you don't realize what impact you might be having on people. But this was even before I announced my retirement. This was about, I think it was last summer. I was in an appliance store. I think I was buying a new refrigerator. And I was talking with the gentleman, and he told a story about how he grew up here. He moved to the East Coast, and then he came back, and he was with his family and turned on the TV. And he said, there's the three logo in the corner, and there's Mark Finan, and suddenly it was home. And when he said that, it just kind of struck me when, you know, I think sometimes we do take for granted that there are certain things like, if you come back to Sacramento after not being here for a while, you see the Tower Bridge, you see certain landmarks that say, oh, this is home. And I think that for a lot of people, KCRA is home. They see the little green three logo or the three logo down in the corner, or they see familiar faces and it's like, oh, I know these people. Me, Mark Finan, I don't know these people, but they know me and they see my familiar face. And it's kind of like what I described about going to New England and seeing the rock walls and the architecture. It just feels like home. And so when people see a familiar face when they've been away for a while, it just feels like home. And those kind of stories, I've heard more of those kind of stories recently. And that means a lot to me that people associate me with a feeling of being at home.
Mark, thank you. And we wish you all the best.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been a pleasure to chat with you and to reminisce about the last 33 years. And I'm looking forward to the next 33 and see what they might bring.
That was Cap Radio's Steve Milne speaking with KCRA3 Chief Meteorologist Mark Finan, who retired on Friday after 33 years with the TV station. Still ahead, a multicultural community festival is returning to West Sacramento this Saturday. We'll get a preview of the third annual All Nations Indigifest. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. We're back in just a moment.